ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Australia's alliance with the United States has been the linchpin of our country's foreign policy for decades.
We value the unbroken friendship between the Australian and the American peoples.
But between the wars and the tariffs and the unpredictability, are we growing apart?
You know who else didn't help us? Australia.
Join me, Hamish McDonald.
And me, Geraldine Doogue, as we ask, do we still need the alliance? Search for Global Roaming on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
Australia is rewriting its privacy laws, with the government proposing a new fair and reasonable test for how companies collect, use and share our data. The idea is to shift some of the responsibility away from you ticking another box and onto the organisations collecting your personal information. So what would these changes actually mean for you? And could they finally give us all a little more control over our own information? This is your guide to technology and culture. My name is Ray Johnston and welcome to Download the Show on ABC Radio National. Now joining me to unpack some of the biggest stories in tech right now is Alice Clark, a freelance journalist with a brand new Substack called Through the Looking Glass, all about tech and lifestyle and everything, Alice.
Thank you so much for having me.
And for the first time on Download This Show, Karen Verspoor, Dean of the School of Computing Technologies at RMIT University. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much. Really excited to be here.
Now, Australia is proposing some of the biggest changes to privacy law that we have seen in a very long time, looking at introducing something known as the fair and reasonable test. Karen, can you tell me what the fair and reasonable test means?
Yeah, so this test basically says, is the data that the company is collecting on you the kind of data that you would agree to let them take from you if they were asked to defend it as being something that they actually need to collect in order to do the business and provide you with the service that you're asking for.
So previously we've relied on, you know, checking a little box or saying, okay, we've handed over the info. Consent is kind of implied. Why is that consent no longer enough, Alice?
Because were you ever actually consenting, or was the option tick this box or not be able to participate in using email or going to any website? You never really actually told what it is you were consenting to unless you were willing to spend apparently 6 weeks a year reading all of the privacy policies you interact with.
I'm curious about the proposed right to delete your data that may be introduced, because this is something that we have seen work in Europe rather well, but Australia historically has not had this right. Alice, how will ours compare to other parts of the world if it does go ahead?
It's really difficult to compare because they're all so fragmented and really difficult for somebody without a law degree to read and fully understand. Australia's is perhaps slightly more limited than the European one. Here it is proposed you'd be allowed to ask major companies that have an annual revenue of $500 million or 2.5 million Australian users to delete all of your data. So it's a right to be forgotten from Google. It's a right to have all of your loyalty data deleted from Woolworths so they don't know how you shop anymore. But you wouldn't be able to ask that of, say, I'm guessing Blue Sky doesn't have 2.5 million Australians, or your greengrocer down the road with your loyalty data. So
okay.
It's a bit more limited.
So this is something that's more aimed at big tech, big business, and not so much, the milk bar down the road that's decided that you need to scan a QR code and give them your email address in order to order your fish and chips.
Yeah, exactly. But it is still a really good start. Like, being able to delete yourself from Google, if you want to be forgotten, that's pretty much the way to do it these days.
Of course, if you do that, you're giving up a lot too, right? So I think it's actually going to be really difficult for people to decide to do that because, you know, it means you might not be able to use your phone anymore, right? If you have an Android device and you need a Google account to log into that, you and you decide to remove yourself from Google, you're giving up something. And arguably, mm-hmm. you're giving up a lot more than what they've taken from you.
But you can create separate burners. And it's also the way this has been used in Europe has been quite interesting. There's one guy who was my favorite example who asked Google to delete him from search engines because he botched a bunch of face plastic surgeries, and he did not want a record of that. So there are risks with the right to be forgotten, as well as rewards for those who are more privacy conscious or just wore a really bad outfit and don't want anybody in the world to remember that ever again.
Alice, I want to talk to that latent cynic in you and ask, what happens if these companies don't comply? If they do go, oh, yeah, but just keep collecting, what's going to happen to them?
Well, it is difficult to see if much will happen. The main thing that I could read in this is that there is a fine of up to $330,000 for businesses, and an individual could technically sue for a major breach of privacy, but it would be a prohibitively expensive exercise. So $330,000 to a company that's making, say, $500 million or more doesn't really seem like a huge penalty. It's unclear whether or not that $330,000 would stack per user, but given how gentle Australian regulators tend to be when it comes to privacy and major companies, I would be surprised if it was much more than a slap on the wrist.
Karen, what's your perspective on that?
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. We're gonna see those big businesses having to justify why they need specific data in specific applications, but they're still gonna try to find their way to convince you that you want to agree to that. And they're still gonna say, hey, if you want this discount on your grocery purchases, then you're gonna need to use your loyalty card, and that means that they're going to be tracking you. So they're going to be telling us more about why they're collecting the data they're collecting, but that doesn't mean they're actually going to change the behavior.
So to summarize, the Privacy Amendment Personal Data Collection Bill 2026 is now out for public comment. There's a few changes with how we deal with privacy in Australia in it. Personal information is going to cover any information that relates to a person who can be identified, even without a name. Anything that artificial intelligence draws about you will count as collected information, just like details that you have put into a form. And the list of sensitive information, that's the category that needs your consent to collect, will now include information from a device that shows your location to within 500 metres and follows you over time. Consent to data collection will need to be voluntary, informed, current, specific, and unambiguous. So that means all those pre-ticked boxes and dark patterns aren't going to be enough anymore. Companies will need your consent before they trade your personal information. And big digital platforms, those with $500 million in revenue or 2.5 million Australian users a month, will have to delete your data if you request it. So this means a right to be forgotten will exist in Australia for the very first time. Also, data breaches will need to be reported to the regulator within 72 hours. If you're wondering what voluntary, informed, current, specific, and unambiguous consent looks like, that's a really good question. And when we figure that out, we'll let you know. You are listening to Download the Show on ABC Radio National with me, Ray Johnston, and Smart Glasses, bringing the privacy debate out of the settings menu and onto our faces. Facial blurring is an idea that's being bandied around at the moment. Alice, why is facial blurring being proposed? And who's proposing it?
So the eSafety Commissioner, like many people, is concerned about the privacy implications of people having secret cameras strapped to their face and going everywhere and being able to record anything they're actively looking at.
Bit of common sense, yes.
Yeah. So eSafety Commissioner has suggested that maybe these glasses could automatically blur the faces of everyone around the user in footage to try and protect the privacy of the people around them. This would completely negate most of the use cases for these glasses that aren't accessibility or AI purposes. But the problem with that is that the companies who are making these glasses would have to be able to competently apply a filter that could not be removed by the user. And you would have to trust that the companies making these glasses, for example, Meta, the one famous for harvesting user data for nefarious purposes, is not just going to suck up the raw video footage and use it for training anyway.
So, Karen, how would automatic blurring of faces through smart glass cameras, how would that actually work?
Yeah, it actually starts with facial detection, right? So you, if you want to blur a face, you have to find it in the image first and then be able to track it, which means that they actually have to capture the faces anyway, like you refer to the raw data, Alice. That's going to be in there anyway. And then they're going to have to apply a technology, probably using AI, right, to basically say these are the boundaries of the face, and then we're going to kind of abstract out all of the specific detail that's in there in order to, replace some of the granularity of the image that's captured in the camera. But they're going to have to start with an AI model that can detect faces and track them in the video.
So I'm assuming then you could reverse engineer it. You could remove the blur later if the face has already been captured and recognized as a face, right?
Well, especially if you've been able to connect it to somebody you know, right? So if you have any other image of this person that's in your video, then you can use an AI to stick it back in.
Okay. So is this a good solution? Is this something that is a positive step forward? Because I feel like we're kind of scrambling at the moment. We've got all of these glasses on the market. We've got cheaper versions of the more expensive models being sold in shops around the country, selling out in shops around the country. Is this a positive idea?
No, not really. It's kind of like the social media ban for kids. It's something that sounds like they're doing something, but in reality doesn't actually address the real problem and just makes everybody feel better without doing anything meaningful.
What kind of rights, Karen, do we have to say, actually, I don't want to be recorded here?
I mean, under the Australian privacy law, people aren't allowed to record you without their permission. But it comes back to something we were talking about earlier, right? Like, what is the teeth that we have as a consumer to make a complaint along those lines? And, you know, it's very unlikely that we're going to act out and or call someone out, like you were saying, Alice, in a setting, either informally or formally. Even though we have the right to do that, and even though we know it's not something that they're allowed to do.
We get a lot of emails at Download This Show. You can send us an email on downloadthisshow@abc.net.au about the fact that these smart glasses are being used for good things by people. They are an incredible accessibility device. You know, we've had Lee Stark, friend of the show, come in with a pair of glasses that he put on my head that was transcribing our conversation in real time. It was an incredible experience to have. What does responsible use of smart glasses look like? Is there a world in which they do integrate in a positive way into our society?
Yeah, like you say, there are so many ways that these cameras can make people's lives better. The problem is there needs to have been more regulation and enforcement around it when they were first introduced, and they frankly needed to have been made by a different company. So if it had been, say, glasses that were specifically for accessibility, that didn't have the ability to record photos and videos of people around you, but just they gave you transcripts, they told blind people what they were looking at, and they made the world more accessible that way without invading other people's privacy, that would be fantastic. If they were mandated to be geogapped on where they could be used for taking photos, for example, they can only take photos in your own home, then yeah, that would be fine too. But because they're made by a company that primarily exists to extract the data of as many people as possible to use for selling advertising, you can't really trust the rest of it. And we've already seen it used in so many different crimes. So that's a long-winded way of saying these glasses could be used responsibly if they were completely different and made by a different company.
Karen, what's your perspective? How do you see smart glasses being used in a good way?
Oh, yeah, they're absolutely really good use cases. I mean, you just said, oh, I'll take a transcription. I am imagining people being able to use it to navigate the world. For example, if you're traveling and you're in a country where you don't speak the language, you could use something like this. It wouldn't have to necessarily be glasses. You could also do this with your phone or other ways, but it would, you know, it's a really easy way to do it. Just listen, have the glasses listen, and then basically tell you, oh, this is what the person is saying, or, you know, or translate a picture of a package into your language so that you know what, you know, if you're buying coffee with whole milk or skim milk, and those sorts of things. So there's lots of places where it could just help us, right? But it comes back to that question of, do they need to store all of this data? Do they need to, you know, send it directly into the cloud after they captured it? Why not just have stronger privacy constraints around how the data is used in real time and then hopefully discarded?
I think the reputation of smart glasses is absolutely taking a little bit of a nosedive. I see the sentiment online is not very positive towards it. At the same time, I recently saw that Apple has lodged a patent to put cameras in AirPods. I'm imagining in a different form factor, the information that could be gleaned through a camera would potentially be less or maybe more of something that society is willing to accept. I don't know. I don't think that this is the last time we're going to see cameras put in things.
From everything that I've read of all the leaks about that AirPods thing, it sounds like it is kind of exactly what I think would be the ideal sort of accessible camera accessory. It doesn't appear to record. It just tells the user what they see. And I think that's kind of something that I'm a lot more comfortable with than something that could be recording you at Legoland or in the bathroom or
yeah,
at the gym.
Absolutely. I'm very interested to see what comes out of that, especially since Apple historically is very privacy focused. So we'll see what happens there. Someone who I didn't expect, though, to be putting cameras in things is Dyson. Alice, you've had a package delivered while we've been recording. Mm. What's in that package?
It is the new Dyson CameraJet toothbrush that I have been really excited about since I first saw it in June. And I have had to keep the secret of a toothbrush that squirts mouthwash between your teeth to floss them while filming your teeth and live streaming it to your phone. I've had to keep that secret for 3 months, Ray. It nearly killed me.
Alice, why do we need a camera in our toothbrush?
So, technically, you don't, but this particular camera uses AI to recognize when there's a gap between your teeth. So it can fire 0.1 mil of mouth rinse, not mouthwash, mouth rinse, between your teeth to floss it, kind of like a Waterpik flosser, while you brush your teeth. So the stated aim was that they wanted to make it so that, like, lots of people don't floss their teeth now. Lots of people don't use mouthwash. What if you could do all of it at the exact same time? Would you be more likely to floss? And the answer, I think, is yes, as long as it doesn't feel too weird.
I think that this is incredible. Karen, what's your thoughts on hearing this? Had you heard of this product before?
I hadn't until Alice told me about it, and I don't even know what to think. I mean, actually, it sounds a little bit like robot surgery, you know, where you've got those robots that are sort of like honing in on exactly the little piece of stuff in your body that needs to come out, you know, that they need to cut out of you. It's using the technology to find those gaps, right? And then throw the mouthwash in there. That's kind of, sorry, mouth rinse.
Mouth rinse, yes.
Ginger mint flavored mouth rinse.
Oh, no.
We can call it like precision toothbrushing. I love it. On the other hand, why? are you going to actually look at that video? I don't know.
So with the other toothbrush that I have that has a camera, I certainly looked at it once and then I definitely intended to use it again because you can use it to see where you are bad at brushing and where you miss the plaque. So the idea is that you will go back and get the plaque that you missed. But in reality, I've just cleaned my teeth. I want to go to bed.
I can't be bothered looking in my mouth. So you're probably only going to look at the camera feed the first five or six times, and then the rest of the time the camera is just going to find the gaps between your teeth. Or maybe there's a whole new market on OnlyFans that we can have.
Oh, no.
Who knows? This
is my big question when it comes to, you know, any product that seems to have worked perfectly fine and then we start sticking cameras in it. What happens to that video footage? Where is it stored? Where does it go? Is it ever deleted? What could it possibly ever be used for in the future? I think you've accidentally answered that question. There's a market for everything.
One thing that I really like about this toothbrush is that Dyson specifically and repeatedly emphasized that the footage does not get saved or stored anywhere. It's not stored on the toothbrush. It's not stored on the cloud. You can connect it directly to your phone to watch it live in the app. But if you want to record it, you have to do a screen recording of your phone.
Right. So it's just a real-time camera. It's not actually recording anywhere.
Yeah. So that makes me feel a lot more reassured.
It does make me feel a lot more reassured while still wondering forever what someone could possibly use footage of the inside of my mouth for. The only thing that I can think of is insurance companies noticing if I've got cavities or plaque and upping my premiums or restricting access to dental services.
I've seen enough action movies. Like, you could use it to make a teeth impression of one of your enemies so you can fake their death and then kidnap them.
Oh, gosh. Karen, what are you imagining?
Look, I actually think there's real potential here to use that to help dentists kind of understand all the different kinds of mouths that are out there and how well people are brushing and flossing and basically helping them learn more so that they can give you better advice.
I love this research data. We can absolutely do this. And it does remind me of the camera that scanned my whole mouth to create a mold of my teeth last time I was at the dentist so that they could make some 3D printed crowns.
We're building an app that right here at RMIT that we're working with the University of Melbourne Dentistry School so that in an Apple Vision Pro, you can get an interactive visualization of somebody's mouth. And it's exactly so that the dentist, because a dentist, you know, all they can do right now is basically stick a torch down your throat and hope to see what's going on in your mouth, right? But if they have a 3D model of it that they can interact with in a digital space, it actually gives them a lot of information that they can use to help you.
Look, that's overall, really I'm cool. Feeling pretty positive about this camera being stuck on this toothbrush. Yeah. I'm not getting surveillance vibes from this in any way, shape, or form. So
me neither.
Sounds good.
But I have to tell you about the lab that I got taken to at Dyson's R&D Center in Singapore, because I feel like you would enjoy this. They built a room with one-way mirrors so the engineers could watch people brush their teeth without the people feeling uncomfortable. Because originally, they just had them like staring at them directly. And then the people brushing their teeth got really self-conscious. And then they had to put in one-way mirrors like it was like an FBI interrogation. So then they could watch the people brush their teeth for 5 years. They would just get people in to watch them brush their teeth with various toothbrushes. And the main thing they learned is that everybody's very confident about brushing their teeth, but not very many people are actually good at it.
That's incredible. Tell me about some tech that's brought you joy this week.
So I'm kind of going back to basics. Next week, I am taking a 13-hour flight with a two-year-old by myself.
There's no joy in this, Alice. I'm failing to see what good could come from this.
So we haven't shown our daughter any movies or TV shows or videos at all. And so she's possibly about to have her first ever real screen time. And I'm currently loading up an iPad with things I think she'll like. And I'm so excited. Oh. Like, there's so much good stuff out there. I'm putting on, like, Walking with Dinosaurs, because she loves dinosaurs.
Perfect.
And some ocean documentaries. She also really loves Emma Memma and Judy Garland at the moment.
Okay.
So some of their videos. Also really into Lady Gaga, which, because we've got all the little Golden Book biographies, and so kind of some of those video clips.
Well, that sounds absolutely delightful.
Maybe some Bluey. But she's also going to have like her Tony box and her headphones for that. So we might not get to screen time. I'm keeping it as a last resort because I want to put it off as long as possible, but I know, I'm just really excited. It's going to be great.
I'm very excited for you, Alice. And Karen, tell me about some tech that's brought you joy this week.
So I am going to go modern and talk about the AI system that I use to transcribe some handwritten notes into a document. I was super excited about this because it meant that I could, instead of sitting with a computer in front of me and the person I was talking to, I could write my notes on a piece of paper, which I really prefer, but still be able to turn it into a structured document. And so I was really excited that the LLM that I was using could actually read my handwriting and turn it into text.
And it was mostly accurate.
It was actually remarkably accurate. Like it tried to turn it into sentences a little bit when I had mostly bullet points. And it got the pronouns wrong because it was like connecting the people in the conversation incorrectly. But apart from that, it actually worked out what I was trying to write down.
I'm very, very happy for you. Karen Versvoort, Dean of the School of Computing Technologies at RMIT University, thank you for joining us on Download This Show.
Thanks so much for having me. It's been fun.
And Alice Clark, a freelance journalist, a new Substack called Through the Looking Glass. Thank you once again for joining us on Download.
Thank you for having me. It's always fun.
And now for some more tech news from the week that was. In case you missed it, parliamentary inquiries are receiving submissions containing AI-generated false information, including fabricated research papers, references, and authors. This is according to an investigation by The Guardian Australia, who identified at least 39 submissions containing hallucinated references. Autonomous vehicles are taking to the sky now, with planes being developed that can fly without anyone in the cockpit. US company Pika is already using autonomous electric aircraft to spray crops, while other companies are working on planes that can deliver cargo. The aircraft use sensors, software, and in some cases AI to plan routes, detect obstacles, and handle takeoff and landing. The technology could eventually be used for passenger flights, although that is still a long way off. Pilot groups have raised concerns about safety, while researchers say the strict safety requirements for aviation mean autonomous passenger aircraft will need extensive testing and regulation. And speaking of taking to the skies, NASA has launched the Nancy Grace Roman Space Telescope. It's on a mission to study some of the biggest questions about the universe, including dark energy, dark matter, black holes, and planets outside our solar system. The telescope has a much wider field of view than the Hubble or James Webb Space Telescope, and it will spend about 100 days travelling to a point roughly 1.5 million kilometres from Earth before beginning its main mission. Over several years, it's going to build a huge map of the universe and look for changes in how galaxies and planets are distributed, giving scientists more information about how the universe is changing and what dark energy and dark matter might be doing. And that's all we've got time for this week. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. We love hearing your thoughts and feedback, of course, so please send them over to downloadthisshow@abc.net.au, or you can slide into my DMs on Instagram @RayJohnston. I do reply. A big thanks to my producer, Jessie Kay. This episode was produced on the lands of the Gadigal, Burramadigal, Darug, Gundungurra and Wurundjeri peoples. I'm Ray Johnston, and you've been listening to Download This Show.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.